Hi, today's October 15th, 2023. I'm Tata Dr. Ward, my good friend, the good Dr. John Westfall, and this is Worldviews Podcast 480. Before we begin, I just wanted to thank my other good friend, Paul Lawler, for taking time to actually sit down with me in person to do a Mobile Views and Mobile Food Views podcast last week, Monday. Really learned a lot from him with his AI chess kit. By the way, that was a hardware. If you didn't take a look at the photos, go take a look at the Mobile Views 3 789 photos. And also some of the output from his new 3D printer called the Bambu, B-A-M-B-U, which looks like a lot of fun. I did learn that I do not have enough space to have a 3D printer in my tiny home. But and so I will live vicariously through Paul's 3D printer. I also want to note if I sound a little bit funnier than usual, or at least different, that's because I'm trying a different mic instead of the relatively nice Yeti Nano USB mic that I use for podcasting. I'm using a Yealink, a Y-E-A-L-I-N-K, UH-37 headset, over the head, you know, over the ears kind of headset with a boom mic. I got it in for review, and I thought I'd try it out with John, and we'll see what it sounds like after we come out of this podcast. I noticed my volume's a little low, but we can fix that later. Another thing I got in for review, I just wanted to mention, not to describe it to endless degrees, but I got a kind of a neat kit to clean things, clean gadgets. And one of the things is a little tools to poke around the AirPods and clean out the case and the AirPods and all that. Now, the case was pretty clean. Nothing came out when I thought I might have some dust or something where, the charging holes, the AirPods. What did surprise me, and I guess it shouldn't, is when I cleaned out the AirPod Pro's sound hole, how shall we put it? Ear doo-doo came out.
Yeah, I saw your photo on that, and I find that happens with mine very often. I have a little spudger thing that I can use to clean it out, and it's pretty common.
Yeah, I guess so.
That makes you feel better. Your ears are normal.
Yeah, producing earwax. So anyway, I thought that was sort of interesting, at least to me, because I don't have golden ears, so I don't think it affected the sound quality or anything, but, sure couldn't hurt to clean it out every now and then. All right. Now, last week we ran pretty long, so John did not get to do his rant. Or
well, it's a weird rant, and it's a rant that I think you really have to have some appreciation for just how confusing Microsoft technology can be when you see this. So Microsoft Bookings has been around for a few years now. It has a commercial version. I mean, it's always commercial because it's in Microsoft 365 in a academic or business tenancy or an education tenancy.
Sure.
It's not, I don't think they have it available in the consumer Microsoft 365. But it's been around and it's designed for teams usually to use. You know, you set up a business and then you have multiple staff, et cetera. And that version of Bookings works pretty well. I used it for years until it randomly stopped generating Teams meeting links for me. That was kind of weird.
Oh, that is
whatever. So they introduced a new version that is a personal booking page. And it's basically for individuals who work in a company that don't necessarily work with customers, but they work with colleagues and they want their colleagues to be able to talk to them and connect with them on a schedule that works for both parties. So I set this up earlier this year, and no problems, except I noticed a weird thing. I use Apple Calendar on both my Mac and my iPad, iPhone, mm-hmm. et cetera. I don't really use Microsoft's existing, client, et cetera, for Outlook. I did for a while, but then I kind of went back to just using the built-in. And I noticed that there were appointments that would appear on my iPhone and my iOS devices in Apple Calendar that wouldn't appear on my desktop Apple Calendar, which is strange because it's supposed to be the same calendar feed on both. So I thought, well, maybe it's just that there's a weird syncing issue, something's going on weird, whatever. So I did some digging and I found out that apparently when Microsoft built the new bookings and they exposed those bookings to the web through the hosted Exchange server on M365, that it works fine if the connector is using Exchange ActiveSync as the method to get your appointments. But if it's using Exchange Web Services, which is a different connector to an Exchange server, then it doesn't have access to bookings appointments. So it's one of these wonderful things where you have no idea what backend your third party system is using. I guess you could always just use first party and use Outlook, and then you'd never have this problem. But it makes you think you might be going insane when you're saying, well, how is it that Apple Calendar can see it here, but it can't see it there? Especially as Apple has gone through great lengths to try to blur the lines between macOS and iOS.
Yeah.
And I actually, while we're talking, I'm going to try to add some widgets on iOS 17 and macOS. You can now get widgets off of your iPhone. And I'm curious if I add the calendar widget, if it will have that appointment or not, if it crashes my iPhone. It probably won't, because it's probably going to grab it from the Apple Calendar on my device. But just very strange. So if you're using Microsoft Bookings and you say, gee, my appointments are showing up in some places but not others, that's probably why.
Hmm. You know, I've never used it, but I know that some of the people that worked with me before I retired, I used it to schedule like student interns who are coming in at, you know, various and sundry hours, not necessarily regularly. And so, yeah, I'm familiar with it. Never use it. I do find it amusing, however, John, that decades after we thought, you know, we would never have to deal with ActiveSync, I forgot that ActiveSync is still basically running in the background of many things and still puzzling us.
Yeah. And, you know, it came up, we were talking, I think, last week I was talking with someone about which is older, EWS or EAS, Exchange Web Services and Exchange ActiveSync. And EWS is the older client. It's supposed to be retired, according to this article on Bleeping Computer. It's supposed to be retired in about 3 years. I assume that means they'll keep Exchange ActiveSync. So at some point, Apple will have to update their connector to use EAS instead of EWS, but still very, very strange.
Yeah. Well, what can I say? Thank you, Microsoft, you know, for...
Yeah, thank you, Microsoft, for so many ways of not working properly.
Well, you know, and you know that it goes to show you that, that despite the complaints people have about Apple's, you know, my way or the highway approach, sometimes it's good to have just one solution for things.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, this is how they do it.
CalDAV would be nice if we would just use that instead of exposing these things in weird ways.
But. Yeah, for sure. Sure. You know, speaking of weirdnesses, I will. It's not exactly a rant, but it's something I. Google released Android OS 14. I don't think they name them anymore. It's not, you know, like Krispy Kreme or anything. They released Android OS 14 on October 4th, same day as their Made by Google event where they announced a new Pixel phones and Pixel Watch and a few other things. And my Pixel tablet got the OS 14 upgrade that day. I mean, like, as I was watching the event, I think I hit update and it updated. My Pixel phone under there, which is relatively recent, it's not an 8, but it's a 7A, which was released this past spring, just would not get it. It's, you're running the current OS. You know, stop pushing my button there. And so finally, the other day, I actually called Google, which is hard to do. You know, they don't. You got to really search for that number. I used Google Bard to search for their phone number. And it says, hey, if you can chat or we have a 10-minute wait, or we can call you back. It's a 1-minute wait. So I said, oh, just call me. I'll speak to somebody. And so it's sure enough, 1 minute after I hit the button, I got a call from Google and they said, what's the problem? I told them what it was. And I said, nice lady says, hey, you know, basically, she's very nice. And she says, we're rolling it out. They're rolling it out in, you know, in waves. And it's going to be up to 10 to 14 days. So, you know, that would be if there was the fourth, I mean, it's 10 days later, let's say the 14th, which was yesterday. And, you know, up until like Tuesday. So, you know, 10 to 14 days. Oh, okay. I just got to be patient. I was just being impatient. I thanked her. And the next day, which was the 13th, I think Friday the 13th or maybe October the 12th, what do you know? OS 14 became available for my Pixel 7a. So, yay. I don't know why it took so long. It took, you know, like not quite 10 days. It took like 8 or 9 days. But I just found it amusing that Google could not push it out. They don't have that many Pixel devices out there compared to, say, Samsung or Apple. And Apple pushes everything out in one day to everybody, as far as I know. So I don't know what the deal is there. But I am now happy to have Android OS 14 on my 7A. Really, it's not that different from, you know, from the casual usage point of view. I know there's some under-the-hood things which I really haven't investigated, but I'm looking forward to at least having a... I guess there's a new magnifier app, but I think that's an option. I should go download that. So that was a very...
So I looked it up. There are still internal code names that follow the dessert naming scheme.
Yeah.
Although external, they haven't had for a while. So 14 is a U. Do you want to take a guess what dessert is that starts with a letter U your code name is? Oh.
A dessert that starts with a U.
You mentioned that 14 was tiramisu and 12 was snow cone. 11 was red velvet cake. So, and apparently 15 is going to be vanilla ice cream.
Ulu. I don't know. It's a fruit. I don't know what it is. What's U?
Well, you put a, the most common one of these does have pineapple as the fruit. So pineapple something is your dessert.
With a U?
Yes.
Wait, where's the U in it?
Well, the second word.
Pineapple upside down?
Yes, upside down cake is the code name for Android 14.
That, I would have never guessed that. Upside down cake. I like it.
Well, yeah, I like the name and I like the dessert too, so.
sigh. Okay, so getting back to the main topic, or not getting back, but getting to the main topic of our discussion. And I, you know, I was surprised I'm not using more of the new stuff. Okay, so I got my, you know, so Apple released iOS 17, iPadOS 17 in September. So it's been out for about a month now, I think, or something close to a month. And I upgraded everything. Before I, you know, it's not in our show notes, John. I should note, I also stupidly upgraded macOS on my two MacBooks on the same day without testing. Hello. And it turns out that the open source Audacity program that I use to, you know, complete the post-processing for our podcast has a weird little bug. So it turns out when Audacity launches, the first thing it does is check for an update, right? That sounds reasonable. Except checking for an update crashes it like almost every time or every other time. So the fix is if you're an Audacity user out there running on macOS 14 Sonoma, is to go into preferences and uncheck check for update on launch, basically. So you have to check for update manually, or actually you should just go to the website. If you check manually, you'll crash. You'll crash Audacity. So there is that. I'm gonna just put that in the show notes so I don't forget. Mac OS 14 versus Audacity. Put that in our blog. Okay. So iPadOS, iOS 17 has been out for a while. I just got my iPhone 15 Pro Max last week. And, you know, my 14 Pro is running 17 already, so nothing new-ish, I think, that I couldn't do there. But I was kind of curious, John, you know, have you found anything differences that you like or you don't like or just confuse the heck out of you?
So there are a few features I have used quite a bit, and some of the things I've turned off. I mentioned this is an iPad or iOS, but in macOS, I turned off that clear your desktop when you hit the back, because apparently I do that reflexively all the time. But the two things I've been using quite a bit, the crosswords in News Plus.
Really?
So this kind of silently slipped out, and Apple did publish an article talking about their belief, or I guess the crossword editors put out their ideals around their crosswords. And what they basically said was they wanted to make them more accessible to non-crossword fans or people that don't do crosswords very often. And this does make them much more accessible. You know, and in fact, my wife does crosswords, and she was telling me about some of the common words that he sees, and I don't see those same words, you know, words that are very specialized and in not, you know, to use a professor way of saying this, words that are so esoteric, they are not in the vernacular. More or less words that nobody knows and nobody uses regularly because why would you? So you don't find that in Apple crosswords, which means that an easy crossword takes me about 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And a challenging one might take 20 to 30 minutes, which is about the amount of time I want to spend doing a crossword puzzle. I don't want to be spending all day wondering, sure, and puzzling and, you know, getting out a dictionary and trying to figure out what they're talking about. So I've really enjoyed doing those. They have mini ones that take about a minute to 2 minutes to do. And then they have full-size ones that, like I said, are in the 10 to 30-minute range for me. You know, mileage may vary depending on your vocabulary and how often you use some of these things. Plus, right, I know I'm also now reaching that point in age cohort where the people writing these things are the same age or older than I am, or just slightly older. So that helps. It's kind of like that effect the first time you go to the grocery store and they're playing music that you grew up with. You go, oh, they're playing good music now.
Yeah,
the same sort of deal. So I've really enjoyed that. And I've also started using the mindfulness state of mind logging. It's very similar to the daily log that I keep, that I've kept since 2019, where I rate my day and rate it 1 to 5. And I'm just kind of curious. I've started using it just to kind of collect data on my moods. And I think they're going to start trying to figure out ways to correlate that data with things like activity. So, for example, if I go into health, I can see the mood data correlated with the steps and exercise minutes and other things. So I kind of find that interesting where that might go. So I figured I'll start keeping some data there. I do wish there was an easy way to export it, which I have not found yet. So I'd like to keep that data. Right now I keep an Excel spreadsheet, so I like to keep it somewhere that I could easily get to it later. But yeah, those are the two big features. The other stuff I've been doing is, you know, the stickers in iMessage. I've been
really
spent a lot of fun making my own stickers. And that was really an ability that should have been there last year. As soon as you could pull out a subject out of a photo, it really should have been that you could do a sticker at that point.
All right.
But yeah, those are the big three things that I've noticed myself doing.
Yeah, for those who haven't tried it, if there is a significant object of focus in any of your photos, you can tap and hold on that image in photos, and it will extract that photo without the background, which is really cool. You can get some really cool effects from that. And that's a pretty good job, I think. You know, purists will probably say you see aliasing and all that. I just see something fun. So there we go. I just wanted to note, you know, I am not a big crossword fan, but one app I've been using is an Apple Arcade. It's called Crossword Explorer Plus. And I think, like some of the ones in News Plus, it's not for the people who like do the New York Times crossword puzzle that apparently is super hard. I've never tried it myself. And it's very easy. I'm going to say generally speaking, it's very easy. You know, like you can finish it in a couple of minutes to 10 minutes. It gives you a ranking, I guess, based on how long it takes people to finish and how many people finish it. So it'll say like 88% of the people who tried this can, you know, have been able to solve this crossword puzzle. And so it gives you kind of tells you before you start how hard it is. And none of them are super hard, but, you know, it ranks from like 98% people finish this to, I haven't seen anything below 80%, I think. So it's not going to break your, you know, break your brain to try this. And some of them are really tiny crossword puzzles, and they're, although I'm not, I've never been a huge crossword puzzle fan. I really enjoy this Crossword Explorer Plus, which is free if you have Apple Arcade. Or because John, you know, convinced me to pay the subscription for Apple One, I have Apple Arcade. That's why I can try this. I have not tried the I tried the mindfulness state of mind in the beta period. It was like, wasn't sure. I was wondering if you were doing it, because I remember you had another app you were using a number of months or years ago. That kind of did a one dot thing or whatever. I thought that was pretty cool.
I think that was just an Excel spreadsheet that I've been using that I've been doing that in. So some stuff out there that I think, you know, we've been quantifying ourselves. And I think about this a lot with all of the data that we quantify ourselves with ever since Fitbit sort of made us think about ourselves in terms of numbers. What do you really do with that data? And the mental health piece is the piece that I don't think we've really combined into it, because at the end of the day, it's cool to know that I do certain things, you know, I'm more active on certain days or I get more sleep on certain nights, but I need the subjective information about how I actually feel. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I have my Aura ring that tells me, oh, you're, you know, you're ready for the day or do what feels good today. It's like, well, yeah, because you don't know exactly how I'm feeling. You just know by the metrics what you think I should feel. And I'd like to be able to predict things like, I will probably feel good if I stop exercising now and start resting, or those sorts of questions.
Yeah, it is interesting. I know there's been a number of articles I've been reading, kind of pop psychology stuff, about, you know, people trying to get a better handle of not just themselves, but, you know, if for employers, people that work for them and all that sort of thing. I guess I should try it. Although, you know, Fitbit, I don't know if you still use a Fitbit, John, but Fitbit added this thing that, because I don't have the premium, I really don't know what it's measuring. But it has something called, where is it? It's got kind of like a stress score or something. Oh, darn it, I can't see it. And it just started a couple of months ago. I haven't really been paying much attention to it. Stress management score. Maybe because I changed phones, it lost everything. I don't know. Oh, how are you feeling? I feel neutral. Yeah. And you know, it never scores me very high. High is good, by the way. You know, like I think over 80, you're like not stressed. I don't feel stressed. I'm not sure what it's measuring that thinks I'm stressed, or maybe I'm stressed and I don't know, which is okay too, I guess. So there's that. Yeah. They did release a new one. I just wanted to mention, I just noticed something. I was distracted when you were talking because I just noticed there's a yellow microphone on my screen, which I've never seen on my Mac OS screen, which I've never seen before. And when I click on it, it says Google Chrome microphone mode, and it's giving me two options, standard and voice isolation. It's dangerous to do this during a podcast, but I'm going to try it. I'm going to switch to voice isolate. Okay, I'm now in voice isolation. I'm kind of curious if I'm going to sound any different when I post-process this.
You broke up for a very tiny second when you did the switch, and then you came back, but you sound pretty much exactly the same. I have the same thing on mine, so I'll keep talking and keep my sentence going while I switch it over here in a second. Okay. With voice isolation, you can tell me if it sounds any different now than when I started this sentence.
No, I can't say it does. Yeah. I have to go look it up. I don't know what this is. I should, I'll do a screen cap of it and we'll figure out what this is.
Just okay. Great that we tested it out live, you know, just why not?
Hey, we're brave.
This is how prepared we are.
That's right. You know, what's it saying? No guts, no glory.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I kind of like this headset. You can probably hear a lot of sibilance and popping because it doesn't have a foam shield on it. I did order one, or I ordered a set of foam shields for the little boom mic on this headset. So I'm going to try it again in the next podcast. Anyways, I'm sorry, John, please go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask a question about your notes about which iPad and iOS feature you're using. You said that you were using standby sort of.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, what is the sort of, and because standby on an iPhone 13 is kind of boring because it turns off because it doesn't have an always on display. So does it do the same on a 15 or does it also just turn off?
So my understanding is that to answer your question is it is different on the 15. So what the 15 does is it is in on mode all the time. And what I'm going to do is you got to be plugged in. So I just plugged in my phone, even though it's fully charged, probably not. And I'm going to turn it off. And then so now it is in, or it was in standby mode. Now it's showing me. Okay, now it's in standby mode. And it's not going to go, I guess it's not nighttime, so it might not switch to the red mode. But it's supposed to be basically bright all the time. I'm not sure that's the best thing in the world. Well, that's the case. And I say sort of because the default only shows the clock with a sweeping second hand and a calendar. So it's not all. I think there's a way to have it show news. And I think on the phone I was beta testing on, I think I see news and weather, but I have not tried it with the 18. So that's why it's sort of, you know, it's like, it's not super useful in my opinion. I guess if I didn't have clocks and things, it would be more useful. Or actually, I don't have clocks and things. I just don't care. One of the great things about being retired, but Yeah, so standby, sort of, in a sense that, you know, yes, I do plug it in, I turn it inside, and I see a, you know, an analog clock with a, I think you have a choice, but I have an analog clock with a calendar, and I'm just not sure. I got to go look at the settings to see if I can put weather and news and other things. I think my other, my test phone, I have a 13 Pro, maybe 12 Pro, might be a 12 Pro, that does show other things when it's on its side and plugged in. It's one of the things I really thought I would like. I also thought I would really like the live widgets or whatever on the iPad, and the font is so small that I don't. So I just popped open an iPad and I see like some news and Financial Times and current weather and something else. And but the font's small, so I got to really focus to read it, even on a large screen. So a little bit disappointing, but at least it shows that the Pixel tablet doesn't even show that, even Android OS 14. Ah, anywho, the surprise to me though is Stage Manager. You know, it's, I don't, well, it depends how you think about it, but it's not like, you know, 1,000 times different from last year's version, from iPadOS 16. But for some reason, it's just different enough that I didn't turn it off. I turned it back on after the update and I said, I can live with this. And I started using it, especially on the M2 iPad Pro, where, you know, it's very responsive on a, you know, on a fast machine. And if you have a keyboard and a trackpad, as I do on my M2 iPad, it's kind of nice to have. It's, you know, to have multiple overlapping windows and all that sort of thing. And even on my non-M...
It might be something I plan on doing, but I still have not found... Maybe I should give it another shot, because maybe I would enjoy Stage Manager, but as of yet, I've not found a good reason to try it again.
Yeah, it's most interesting if you have an Apple Silicon-based iPad, you know, the new iPad Air or the Pro series, because that allows you to have the extended display if you plug in another monitor, and to have a keyboard. And I don't know if you need both a keyboard and a mouse, but at least a keyboard, I think, maybe just a mouse. And you got to have a mouse, now that I think about it, because you can't really do much on the external display if you don't have a mouse or trackpad. But it's really nice to have an external, you know, a second display, not just a mirrored larger display, with Apple Stage Manager on. And yeah, it's not quite enough to replace a Mac or, you know, a Chromebook or anything, but it is really close. I'm not one of those people who like, I'm just going to like ditch everything and use this just to prove a point, because, you know, there's just not enough days my life left to fuss with that sort of thing. I want the path of least resistance, and it is reducing resistance. So I'm really, really quite happy with what I'm seeing in Stage Manager. I hope to see more. The other thing I'm happy with, by the way, is, you know, I've been complaining for like a couple of years now that ever since I got my Apple One account, that the audio stories in Apple News Plus isn't available on iPads. You can only hear it on iPhones. But now, if you go into the Apple Podcast app, not the news app, you can hear the Apple News Plus audio stories there. So, yay.
Very good.
And, you know, I like the speakers on my iPad. And there are lots of times when I'm just puttering around, like not looking at the screen, but I want to listen to something and not wear a headset. And it sounds pretty good coming out of the iPad speakers, you know, just to hear news or some report of something or other. Yeah, really happy with that.
It sounds like iOS 17 will be a useful thing for both of us, but I don't know if we quite have what we're going to be taking away from it just yet.
Yeah,
I think we've got a few things, and maybe in another 2 or 3 weeks or months or so, we can revisit the topic. I always think about that sort of right before WWDC every year. You know, what was it from last year that I actually used that they announced and hyped up, you know? So it's always fun to look back and go, oh, I guess that is a useful feature, even though I did not think it was going to be that useful at the time.
Yeah. And speaking of useful features, you know, I know that photography purists don't like to use Apple's portrait mode because they say, well, it doesn't look as good as, you know, a good camera with a great lens and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, optical depth of field, blah, blah, blah. But I like portrait mode. I use it a lot. But with iOS 17, it's still there. You know, you can still take portrait photos and you still choose what kind it is. But if you want to edit it after the fact, it's really hard to, I still can't remember where the portrait mode changes are. You know, where you can choose the different types of bokeh effects, and it's somewhere.
Yeah.
But, and I always have to go figure, every time I try to use it, I have to go remember where it is because I can't. Like right now, I'm like looking as well, is it edit? Is it filters? No, it's not filters. If you type portrait at the bottom? No, that changes the f-stop. Is it adjust? No, it's not that. Definitely not crop. And it's there. I just don't remember where it is. And it's also not in that portrait in upper left corner because that just lets you turn portrait mode on and off, which is kind of neat. He says, I took a portrait photo by accident, you know, and it just says, no, that's okay. You can turn it off. We can get back, infinite depth of field. So everything is in focus if that's what you want. Anyway, there's a way to do it. I remember reading how to do it. I just don't know what it is. I got to go look it up again because I forgot. So I don't know why they decided to make it harder.
The photo that that feature you're talking about, I always find funny because when I use the photo effects, because I end up working with people that are not very tech savvy in a sense, mm-hmm. they know how to take photos, but they don't necessarily know how their phone can do cool things. I always get people going, wow, you take really nice photos.
Yeah.
And I just tell them I use the photo feature in... iOS, portrait feature. I did not do anything crazier than that. So
yeah.
It is always humorous to me. You take such nice photos. You could take them too. Just swap over from photo to portrait.
Yeah. I'm glad you appreciate portrait mode too, because I know some photography experts, you know, tend to poo-poo it, but as a non-photographic expert, I enjoy it. So you thank you, Apple, for that.
Great photos of pets.
Yes, exactly. But could you please... make it easier to change the portrait mode type like it was in iOS 16 because this new thing is like, I think also it's supposed to allow you to even, let me go check now that I think about it. So even photos that you took without portrait mode on, I don't see the option to turn portrait mode on to a non-portrait mode photo. There's supposed to be a way to do that. I just don't know what it is. Oh, there it is. Here's a photo I did not take in portrait mode. Or did I? I don't know. There's supposed to be a way to turn portrait mode off because the iPhone 15 Pro and Pro Max takes enough photographic data when you take a photo that it's supposed to... Oh, yeah, it does. I just looked at a photo that I took without... Oh, I like it. Without, and I turned portrait mode on for it. That's nice. Okay, I hope it doesn't create a second image for Google Photos to back up to, but that's all right. I guess that's the other thing that I have not made a good use of, but I'm looking forward to learning more about is now that the 15 Pro and 15 Pro Max can turn anything into portrait mode, even if you forgot to turn it on, or turn off something where if you turned on portrait mode by accident, you really didn't want to. Those are kind of nice features. The other thing I haven't really played with is using the Pro RAW formats, mostly because of size. I'm afraid of the size of those photos. I did turn on the Pro HEIF format, which is, you know, more highly compressed. But I haven't really played with it in any apps. Have you played with that at all, John?
I have not. But it's reminding me that I have software that I bought years ago. I bought Affinity Suite when it went on sale because it's a purchase.
So yeah.
It makes me think I really should play with things like Affinity Photo and some of the other software that just play around with some of my photos. I haven't done a lot of that work in a long time of touching, retouching, color correcting, all those things.
Did you buy Affinity Photo for your desktop or for your iPad or
desktop? That was maybe a unified purchase. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I remember it was kind of a significant cost, not like hundreds of dollars, but I think it was like
$100.
I'm thinking of an iPad. For an iPad, it was like maybe $50, mm-hmm. which is, you know, there's no subscription, right? So that's pretty good. Oh, here it is. Purchase either the Windows or Mac OS version for one-time payment of basically $70. Get the entire suite for $165. And you can buy the iPad version on its own for $1,849. No monthly cost, whatever you decide. What did you like about Affinity Pro that, aside from the fact that it was a bundle option?
I think it was the bundle option. And it was no, added cost later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I got to think about it. 1850 is not bad for iPad. I'll give it some stock. See, John, it's just, oh, one other thing I wanted to notice, since I've been kind of harping on this for years now, is, you know, I've been complaining about my gosh awful Lenovo USI 1.0 pen, for several years now, because it's just a piece of junk. It literally, not broke, but it came into pieces, like a spring fell out for the battery. It's not even like soldered in. When I opened it to put the battery in, I first got it years ago, and it was never very good. But at any rate, when I got my Pixel tablet, I bought a Penoval USI 2.0 stylus, which works great with the Pixel tablet, I must say. And it also works fine with the Chromebook. And recently I got a chance to review, oh golly, what brand is it now? Let me look. Oh, I don't think I reviewed it yet. It is called, again, preparation. It is called, what's the brand name? It's a really weird brand name. Evach, E-V-A-C-H. It's really reasonably priced. It's $40, compared to, say, $130 for the Apple Pencil 2 or $60 or so for the Penoval. And it's got things that Penoval doesn't have, like a status light, buttons. And it's pretty responsive. Came with, like, a couple of extra tips. I'm really kind of pleased with it. USB-C, rechargeable. The only thing it doesn't do is it doesn't stick magnetically to the back of the Pixel tablet, but it's, minor in the scheme of things. So I'm going to be writing a review of this pretty soon. I need to do a couple more tests. Pressure sensitive. It says 4,096 pressure levels of pressure. Works at anything that supports USI 2.0, which is a lot of stuff these days on the non-Apple side. And so I'm quite pleased with it. It's a good value for $40. Compared to, like I said, the $60 or so for the Penoval, which is also very good, and the Apple Pencil 2, which is phenomenal, but also phenomenally expensive, relatively speaking. So, oh gosh. Okay, so I'm going to have to spend $18.50 of my hard-earned retiree money. I have other things. I bought things like Pixelmator and stuff years ago for the iPad, which is, updated. Also no subscription. So looking forward to that. We'll give it some choice. Okay. So portrait mode thing, pro raw choices still kind of puzzle me. I've watched a bunch of videos, and the last thing is Freeform, which, is one of those things I really wanted to like when I first read about it before we got access to it in, iOS 15. I thought, wow, this sounds like Whiteboard that works. Microsoft Whiteboard famously is another thing I was looking forward to. And it was just like, it's just kind of flaky. And I remember once I was doing a session with some people, I actually lost my whiteboard, but I still haven't found a real reason to use Freeform regularly. In fact, I've been using Notion a lot more now for my note-taking, not Freeform. Still use Keep, gave up on Evernote. But I really, it's just one of those things I want to learn to use more. The other thing that not so much puzzles me, but I need to learn is the new features in Apple Notes, which, you can now link notes and you can create like categorized shopping lists. And I haven't tried any of that stuff. Have you tried any of that?
No, I've played around with a little bit of the categorization in notes, but I've not done anything explicitly with it. But Freeform, yeah, still bugs me too. I just want a web view. That's all I want on Freeform.
There you go, right.
It would become instantly useful to me if it had a web view. But
yes.
For some reason, it does not.
And that's why Notion is so good, because it has, well, I don't know if they're native apps, but it has apps and a web view. So whatever you're on, you've got access to your stuff. Yeah. Well, okay. And, I see a picture of John's cat. Is that one of your portrait views?
Or yes. Portrait
photos? Okay, what's that below you have? You have like a picture of an NT server.
Oh, that was what I was playing with before our podcast, living in the olden days. I had a couple old Windows NT virtual machines that I was playing with.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of cats, maybe we should start doing book reviews too. But if you have not, what's the starter villain? If you are a cat, I am not even a huge cat fan myself, but If you are a Cat fan, you will especially enjoy John Scalzi's new novel, Starter Villain. It sort of spins the head on the, or the, spins the view on kind of the James Bond villain thing. They're not, yeah. And so it's really all about the villains. There's no hero. No, the protagonist, I guess, is a hero, villain, who's very likable. It's one of the things I'll say is a very likable hero villain. And cats and dolphins. And I won't ruin it more than that, except say the dolphins and the cats are hugely, hugely entertaining in this novel. It's also pretty short. Scalzi's novels tend to be on the short side. And by short, I mean, I listen in Audible, so I don't know how many pages it is, but it's under 9 hours, I think. I should also note, you know, I've had a couple of books I read lately that I was just, it's like, boy, this thing, if I were the copy editor, I would have thrown out about 12 chapters. It's just a waste of time. Whoever the copy editor was for Starter Villain, that person deserves a pat on the back because he or she did a terrific job, or they, I guess. He, she, they did a terrific job on editing this, I'm sure, because this thing just moves along. There is no wasted sentence anywhere. It is great. Very entertaining. Starter Villain, my pick of the week. All right,
very John. Good.
Thank you as always, and we will talk to you next time.